Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you those stories, along with Anne Ball and John Russell. Later, Katie Weaver will have this week's personal technology report. But first, 3 months ago, the top commander of United States and international forces in Afghanistan met with a U.S. Senate committee. Army General John Nicholson spoke about military operations against the Taliban. Nicholson said he needed a few thousand more troops to end what he called a stalemate in Afghanistan. Since then, spring has returned to the country. In recent years, the warmer weather has linked to new fighting between Taliban and international forces. Yet the U.S. administration has yet to announce its plans for Afghanistan. Sean Spicer is a spokesman for President Donald Trump.
No decision has been made, so let's not get ahead of what that ultimate policy will be.
U.S. military officials tell VOA that the Trump administration's policy could include sending a few thousand more international troops to Afghanistan. American and international military leaders have sent additional troops to the country in the past to fight Taliban forces. But experts say any additional troops sent in the future will be deployed differently. Thomas Spohr is a retired lieutenant general. He currently directs the Washington-based Heritage Foundation National Defense Center.
This time we are directly enabling the Afghan army, so we're trying to make that army more powerful. And so it's a different thrust than what we did in the past.
Officials say the administration's policy will be directed more on the needs of the international force than the number of troops. They think the administration could provide support for increased Afghan air power and special forces. Some experts do not believe an increase in the number of coalition troops will have an immediate effect. Daniel Coates is the U.S. Director of National Intelligence.
The intelligence community assesses that the political and security situation in Afghanistan will almost certainly deteriorate through 2018, even with a modest increase in military assistance by the United States and its partners.
The Taliban now controls more territory in Afghanistan than at any time since 2001. But more military pressure could be a way to force the Taliban to begin negotiating with the Afghan government. Officials tell VOA that Afghan forces have a goal of slow but continuing progress over the next few years, not a fast defeat of the Taliban. Some have criticized the Afghan military's stalemate with the Taliban. But American generals say the anti-terrorism operation has been successful. General Raymond Thomas is the head of the U.S. Special Forces Command.
The one objective we had for why we went there in the first place that we've accomplished over the last 15 and a half years is the avoidance of another attack from that area. And that certainly is an accomplishment and something that we need to reinforce going forward.
The importance of the anti-terrorism operation has increased since Islamic State fighters moved to Afghanistan. Their arrival and the decision to support a long-term fight against the Taliban lead many experts to think that Trump will not seek to remove U.S. troops from Afghanistan anytime soon.
Donald Trump's first foreign visit as U.S. president will not be to neighboring Canada or Mexico, like all other American presidents since Ronald Reagan. Trump will go first to Saudi Arabia, where he will be welcomed by King Salman. The Saudi leader is organizing a greeting committee of as many as 20 other heads of state, representing a large percentage of the world's 1.5 billion Sunni Muslims. Robert Satloff is head of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He thinks the trip will show how Trump's policies on the Middle East are different from those of former President Barack Obama. The most useful way to look at President Trump's strategy is to see him as the anti-Obama, Satloff says. Satloff also says Obama made a purposeful effort to talk directly to the people. His first trip to the Middle East included speeches not to national assemblies and parliaments, but to universities, where he could talk over the heads of the leaders. He wanted to create a new balance in the Arab world, characterized by speaking to people rather than leaders. Trump wants to undo all that. Trump's aides believe his visit to Riyadh is a chance for him to improve relations with Muslims. During the 2016 election campaign, Trump made critical comments about Muslims, and he began his presidency with an announcement of a temporary ban on Muslim refugees and visas for people from several Muslim-majority countries. Human rights groups are not surprised that Trump has chosen to meet with the Saudi king. It's certainly a consistent choice, given the parade of dictators who've been welcomed at the White House, said Andrea Presso of Human Rights Watch. This week, Trump meets at the White House with several autocratic Muslim leaders, including Egypt's Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey. Richard LeBaron of the Atlantic Council was the U.S. ambassador to Kuwait. He says expectations are low. The travel ban didn't come as a shock to Muslims. They had built it into their expectations about Trump. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster told reporters that the president would tell Sunni leaders to fight radical Islam. Trump has called it an ideology that uses a perverted interpretation of religion to justify crimes against all humanity. McMaster said the president will encourage our Arab and Muslim partners to take bold new steps to promote peace and to confront those, from ISIS to Al-Qaeda to Iran to the Assad regime, who perpetuate the chaos and violence that has inflicted so much suffering throughout the Muslim world and beyond. That message is likely to be welcomed by Sunni Muslim leaders. They worried about Obama's attempts to improve relations with Iran, a country they blame for much of the trouble in the Middle East. Ali Shahabi is a Saudi Arabian citizen and the head of the Arabia Institute, a Washington-based research organization. He said Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia sends a message that he understands that America's Muslim allies are the first line of defense in the fight against terrorism. Trump begins his 9-day overseas trip on Friday.
Iranians will cast their ballots for president on Friday. President Hassan Rouhani faces strong competition from a more conservative opponent, Ebrahim Raisi. Raisi is a former government lawyer. He has gained support from conservative Iranians who are dissatisfied with the leadership of Rouhani. They have criticized him for wanting to open up Iran to Western values and for not doing enough to help the poor. The Iranian election is on the same day that U.S. President Donald Trump begins a 9-day international trip, his first in office. Trump will arrive in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia Friday.
The move is seen as an effort to reinforce U.S. relations with Middle East allies, as it leads a coalition against the Islamic State terror group in Syria and other countries. Saudi Arabia, a mostly Sunni Muslim nation, competes for influence in the Middle East with Iran, a mainly Shiite Muslim country. Friday's vote is the first Iranian presidential election since the country reached a nuclear agreement with the U.S. and other world powers. The deal was reached in 2015 under former President Barack Obama. Trump has been critical of the nuclear deal. In the agreement, Iran agreed to place limits on its nuclear enrichment program. In return, Western countries reduced some economic restrictions on Iran, including permitting oil exports to Europe and the releasing of billions of dollars. Rouhani was one of Iran's main nuclear negotiators before becoming president. He is closely linked to the nuclear deal.
Supporters of Rouhani say the deal helped avoid war. Many Iranians, however, have not felt the economic effects of that agreement. Supporters of Raisi say Rouhani has failed to reduce poverty. They have proposed providing new monthly unemployment payments and public works projects to create jobs. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has not officially endorsed Raisi. But he has been critical of Rouhani's efforts as president. In a video released in March, Khamenei said, "I am aware of the people's situation. Therefore, I can sense the bitterness of the people, especially the lower classes, from economic problems such as inflation, unemployment, discrimination, equality, and social harms." Raisi's candidacy received additional help Monday with the withdrawal of Mohammed Bagher Khalibaf. He is the mayor of Iran's capital, Tehran. Khalibaf gave his support to Raisi. The two campaigned together on Monday.
However, no Iranian president has lost a re-election since the 1979 Islamic Revolution brought Iran's religious rulers to power. Rouhani is often described as a moderate. He was a close ally of reformer Ali Akbar Hoshami Rafsanjani. Raisi currently serves as the head of the Imam Reza Charity Foundation, a large group of businesses and investment funds. Sanam Vakil is an expert with the international affairs group Chatham House. She says the election may say a lot about Iran's future. A Rouhani victory would signal popular support for his policies of economic and political integration as well as moderation, she said. But she added that a win by Raisi could bring about a more confrontational approach to domestic and regional policies. Six candidates were approved for this year's presidential election. Among those not approved was former conservative president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Four candidates remain in the race. If no candidate receives a majority of the vote Friday, the top two vote-getters will face each other in another election.
Thousands of Africans who came to the United States to escape Ebola virus disease might have to return home as another Ebola case has been found in the continent. The World Health Organization says a second case of Ebola virus disease has been confirmed in the Northern Democratic Republic of Congo. WHO reported on Tuesday that laboratory tests confirmed the infection among 20 suspected cases of the disease. Ebola was blamed for more than 11,000 deaths in West Africa between 2013 and 2016. Many of the victims were from three nations: Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Congo has already experienced smaller Ebola outbreaks. 3 years ago, the U.S. government approved temporary immigrant status for about 5,000 West Africans in 2014. The Department of Homeland Security gave them permission to live and work in the United States until the virus was contained. The special protected status was given to individuals from Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Last year, those countries were declared Ebola-free. Now, hundreds of Africans living in the state of Minnesota are about to lose their temporary immigrant status. They must either return home or get permission to stay, Minnesota Public Radio reported. Abdullah Kyatamba is executive director of African Immigrant Services in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. He and other immigration leaders say any move to send the West Africans home is premature. They say the three countries are still recovering from Ebola. They believe it is not safe for the immigrants to go home yet. John Keller is head of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. He says healthcare systems in the countries hit hardest by Ebola were already shaky before the Ebola outbreak. It's great these countries have been declared Ebola-free, but the toll that fighting Ebola took on the countries, you have to take that into effect, too, Keller said. Abdullah Kiatamba estimates that between 200 and 500 immigrants may lose their temporary immigrant status. U.S. officials have yet to announce an exact number. It is unclear how many of the immigrants have returned home or found other ways to make their immigration status permanent. Kiatamba said that more than 11,000 people died during the Ebola outbreak, but that the disease affects more than just healthcare systems. The employment system, economic system, social system have all collapsed, he said. Their coming to the U.S. was a very important humanitarian step, and I think the reason for their coming has totally not been eliminated. At first, the temporary immigrant status was supposed to last 18 months. It ended twice, each time 6 months. I'm John Russell.
This is what's trending today. If you are a fan of Lady Gaga or the National Basketball Association, you may have heard about an old piece of exercise equipment that is making a comeback. It is called the VersaClimber. It was invented in 1981. It is a combination of a stepper and a climber. It is not very common to see people using a VersaClimber at gyms. It is not as popular as other workout machines. But that may be changing. Lady Gaga talked about using the VersaClimber to get ready for her energetic halftime performance at the Super Bowl earlier this year. LeBron James, who plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers basketball team, put up a video of himself using a VersaClimber last summer. James has since introduced his teammates to the machine. The machine seems to work. Viewers were impressed with Lady Gaga's show at the Super Bowl, and the Cleveland Cavaliers have done well in this year's NBA playoffs. The website ESPN.com recently ran a story about how the Cavaliers have been using the VersaClimber. It has led to a lot of discussion on social media about the benefits of the exercise machine. Dave McMenamin wrote the ESPN story. He said contests to see machines Collins for VersaClimber. He said the machine was at its most popular about 30 years ago, but its popularity is rising once again. Now, some gyms are even offering VersaClimber classes for their members. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Last Friday, the largest cyber attack ever affected more than 200,000 computers in more than 150 countries. The attack used a virus that locked the computer's data. The attackers demanded payment to unlock the computers. The virus, called WannaCry, infected computers in organizations including the British healthcare system, the American company FedEx,
and Russia's Interior Ministry. The Learning English story, Ransomware Affects Computers Worldwide, explains more about the virus. Although Friday's attack was stopped, the virus may soon return in a different form. It is important to learn about the virus and steps you should take now to protect your data from future versions of WannaCry. WannaCry attacked computers that were connected to the internet and used Windows operating systems. The systems affected had not yet been updated with a security patch that Microsoft released in March. A developer accidentally discovered a way to prevent WannaCry from spreading. He looked at the computer code and noticed that the virus was directing computers to a domain name. He checked on the domain name and discovered that it was available. So he bought it for less than $11. That simple move enabled a kill switch that prevented WannaCry from spreading further. Unfortunately, the kill switch does not unlock computers that were already infected by the virus. The developer has chosen to remain nameless, but uses the Twitter account @malwaretechblog. He wrote a blog post that explains in detail how he happened to discover the kill switch for WannaCry. The post is called "How to Accidentally Stop a Global Cyber Attack." This cyber attack used a security hole that still exists for computers running older versions of Windows. Computers running Windows 10 that have not yet installed the update are also at risk. The virus may attack again. All the hackers have to do to launch a new cyber attack is to change the domain name in WannaCry, then release the updated virus. You can protect yourself against future cyber attacks. Make sure to download the latest Windows security patch to your computer. Microsoft, the maker of Windows, has now released security patches for older versions of Windows that give protection against WannaCry. For help, visit Microsoft's page called "How to Keep Your Windows Computer Up to Date." Permit automatic Windows updates if you do not want to worry about keeping your computer updated. Also, make sure that you save or back up your data. Do regular backups of your data, both locally with an external drive and in the cloud. That way, you can protect your data when another cyber attack takes place. Be sure not to click on links or download attachments in emails unless you are sure that they are not phishing emails from hackers. Although the WannaCry virus attack did not happen this way, others have happened this way in the past. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.